This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Evening. I love a crowd with low standards. Golf has always provided compelling storytelling, and those stories are sometimes stranger than fiction. Take Tony Finau. He grew up far away from the palaces of golf privilege. His first set of clubs were a set of sheep beaters cobbled together at thrift stores, and his father taught him to play using a book and a VHS tape and a mattress. But last year, Tony played in his first Ryder Cup and created some agonizingly unforgettable moments at Augusta. That's why I got on a plane to Salt Lake City in the dead of winter for some FaceTime with one of the PGA Tour's most engaging and unlikely stars.
As we soar above Utah's Wasatch Mountains, there isn't a lot of snow on the ground. But here, one of the state's most beautiful golf courses is resting for the winter under a blanket of white. And I could use a blanket too. It's wicked cold out here.
118 in here.
Exactly.
Tony, thanks for coming on the show.
I feel like in the golf world, if you get on Faherty, you kind of made it in golf. So here I am. Thanks for having me.
We're here at Victory Ranch, just outside of Park City. And I believe there's a golf course underneath the snow out there that's really nice. You're an honorary member here?
I am. Yeah, it's a spectacular place and very special to me. I think it's the best golf course we have to offer here in Utah. It's a very peaceful place. So cool for us to be here.
Well, my researchers, who are more often wrong than right, tell me that you sort of first fell in love with golf watching the 1997 Masters.
Yeah, seeing Tiger do what he did really drew me to the game. As a player, I had just started playing, and to see someone, for me, with the same skin color, playing a game that I started to enjoy was really, really cool for me. And it definitely drew my eye to do something that was different.
The 97 Masters was the tournament that hooked you on golf.
Yeah.
In 2018, you get to play in your first. How do you approach that tournament, you know, with your mental history of it?
It was unbelievable. I soaked it in all week. You know, every experience that I had throughout the week seemed like it was like a dream. You know, it really was for me.
Every experience? Tell me about the par three.
I get to the seventh hole, and I was like, I'm a gap wedge, and I hit the shot. Am I ever thinking it's going to go in? Never. It never even crossed my mind that this is going on. I'm saying, if anything, this thing's going to race off this green, you know, and I'm going to have a chip shot. So when that thing hit the pin and disappeared, the excitement level for me was one like I don't know if I've ever experienced before. You know, at that split moment, I'm kind of sprinting up the fairway. I'm thinking, I should check on my family. Maybe they're celebrating with me. But then what happened next was you know, probably the most embarrassing and the craziest moment of my life.
It's bizarre.
I end up tweaking my ankle a little bit.
No, you didn't tweak it. Tweaking. You ruptured it out of the socket.
I did, yep.
And then you just put it right back in and kept going.
And honestly, I'm thinking to myself, hopefully nobody saw that.
So no. Nobody saw that.
Nobody actually saw what just happened. I popped it back in and, you know, I'm kind of limping and saying hi, you know, acknowledging the crowd. And the first thing my wife says to me as she runs up to me, she says, dude, are you okay? I just saw you pop your ankle back in place. And as soon as he said that, then I knew the whole world saw it.
Yeah. Did you think you were going to drop out of the tournament at any stage?
When I woke up after barely getting any sleep, if I did sleep, I couldn't put any weight on my left foot, which is the ankle that it happened to. And so that's when a lot of doubt kind of started to creep into my mind that, man, my chances of playing in my first Masters could be gone. It was tough for me. It was a little devastating throughout that night.
Then you go out and shoot 68. What did you do to your ankle?
We taped the crap out of it, and then I had to change my mechanics a little bit. You know, my coach Board Summerhays and I, we got on the range and basically was like, what can you do and what can't you do? And what we knew for sure is that we could put weight on this foot.
Right.
We knew we couldn't put any weight on this one and transfer that much weight, but we knew we could put weight on this one. So mechanically, what we did was we moved the ball way back because my weight was now way back, and I had to stay that way. And I basically just used my athleticism, I feel like, to hit the ball off my back foot, and
it's amazing.
That was it. Yeah, and that's the change that we made mechanically. But once I told myself that I was going to play, I was going to play.
This is someone that has a very short backswing, you know, and if you can't put any weight on your left side on the way through, you're going to have a very short follow through as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So you end up high on the leaderboard in the final round of your first Masters with an altered swing. I mean, that is incredible.
You hit a shot on 17 that was maybe the best of your career.
Yeah, I think it is, no question. I hit a tee shot off 17 that hit the trees on the right and kicked back about 60, 70 yards. I had 190 yards to the pin, and I had to cut this ball 70 yards off my back foot.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, I have a 5-iron out, and I hit this beautiful banana slice around the trees that lands on the left center of the green and is literally moving sideways, you know, trickles all the way up to about 3 feet. And that was my 6th birdie in a row at the time, and it was unbelievable, the feeling. It really was.
Tony finished his first Masters in a tie for 10th, serving notice that even with a popped ankle, this Samoan comes to play.
Walking off the 72nd hole, the 18th green, I felt like I won the tournament.
Thank you. Tony's rise to the highest echelons of golf is like a fantasy screenplay. Here's my Hollywood pitch. A young Samoan fire dancer comes to Salt Lake City. No, really. He fire dances to keep from freezing his ass off in the wicked cold, but he also fire dances to melt the snow so that he can trade his torches for Salvation Army golf clubs and hit ice cubes on the driving range.
You were the first Tongan and Samoan to make the PGA Tour. Which are you? Are you Tongan or Samoan or both?
Yeah, I'm both. Yeah.
Both?
My dad's Tongan and my mom's Samoan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I could get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, you see, when I think of Tongan or Samoan, I think of rugby. A giant canoe with an outrigger.
Yeah, no question.
I don't think about golf.
No, that's one of the biggest parts of my story is golf is so left field for Polynesians. Nobody in our culture plays golf or our people play golf.
Well, your brother Gipper, he was kind of a prodigy, wasn't he?
He was.
You know, and you were kind of in the shadow for a long time. How did that affect you?
He won a golf tournament when he was 6 years old.
Six?
6 years old, a 10 and under division golf tournament in Utah. And so newspapers were all over him and a lot of the local news. And this is kind of the same time I wanted to start playing golf. And that was just kind of the extra nudge for me to start playing, I feel like. You know, because I started to be known when I started to play as his older brother. Nobody really knew who I was.
Were you 7?
I was 7, yeah.
Right.
I was 7 years old. And
the old man?
Yeah, exactly. So he started playing when he was 5. He played for about 18 months, but he excelled at an incredible rate. And it took me a couple of years to catch up to even compete with him and play at his level.
How does your dad, a man who knows nothing about golf, how does he teach you the game?
As a kid, being, I think, pretty vulnerable, I don't think I knew he didn't know what he was doing.
Right, and this was all because of Tiger Woods?
Because of Tiger.
Yeah.
And I think he helped not only draw my eyes to the game, but also my dad's.
Now, your dad must have had some idea of what he was trying to tell you. Where did he get that from?
I don't know where he got the book or where he got the video, but our golf Bible was Golf My Way from Jack Nicklaus.
So really the two guys that kind of influenced your career the most were Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
That's starting to make a little more sense to me.
It's starting to come together a little bit.
That you turned out the way that you did.
Yeah, no question.
When it was too cold to play golf, you hit balls in your garage. What did your dad set up for you down there?
He had this brilliant idea to put a mattress in the middle of our garage. So if you could picture just a small garage unit, he would put the mattress right in the middle. I would hit on one side and my brother would hit on the other side. So simultaneously we're hitting into the opposite sides of the mat so we could hit at the same time.
Did you imagine where the ball was going to end up when you hit it into the mattress?
I would a little bit.
Yeah.
And we started to get anxious when we first were in the mattress. I remember hitting in there and thinking to myself, man, I wonder if the ball's even going far or how the ball's traveling.
What sort of equipment were you using?
Secondhand store equipment, yeah. So we got our first set from, it was all different types of clubs, but just from basically a Salvation Army place. I was getting like one club at a time, just meaning every few months we would add a club, you know, to my set. So I would show up to tournaments sometimes and some of the kids would go, what are you using? You know, I've got Titleist this and I've got the new shaft and all these things. And I would be clueless about what they were talking about. Whatever we could scrounge together were the clubs that we played with for the first handful of years I played golf.
Tell me about the Jordan River golf course.
It's the ultimate gold track. Just meaning it looked like they just put a bunch of flags out in the middle of grass. But that's that's a golf course we grew up on.
And you learned how to play fast. I read somewhere, you know, because of the insects at Jordan River, you know, you didn't want to spend too long out there.
Well, not only that, you couldn't stand over the ball for too long because they're going to, you know, 15 mosquitoes on you by the time you take the club back.
In 1997, when Tony was a small boy, he discovered golf and Tiger Woods. 21 years later, Tony celebrated with his family after Captain Jim Furyk selected him to join Tiger and play with America's best on the 2018 Ryder Cup team.
We're looking for guys that have had a great body of work all year. Tony's had 11 top 10s. We're looking for guys that are in good form right now. He just went second, fourth, and eighth in the playoffs. I just really feel like Tony checked all the boxes. Ultimately, I thought he was our best pick.
You were the fourth and final pick.
I know.
Must have been agonizing.
Oh, man, it was crazy. Yep. They picked three, Bryson, Phil, and Tiger, which were the no-brainer picks.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was one of a handful of guys.
You were a brainer.
Exactly. I was one of a handful of guys that could have, you know, that were auditioning for that last spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately for me, I got picked.
Being a part of a Ryder Cup team means that you're a part of a really special club.
Yeah.
What did it mean to you?
To have made that team and to be part of the history, just to be a small part of the history of what really the highest level that we play at in this game, the most prestigious cup that we play for, man, it means everything to my golf career.
So. You see, I'm delighted to hear you say that because I think for the longest time, and part of the reason that the American side hasn't done that well in recent years is it didn't actually mean that much. It's always meant the world to Europeans because we were, when I was a European, we were judged on, our Ryder Cup record as well as the amount of tournaments.
Right.
That you win, and I think it's starting to get that way now here in the United States.
Yeah, I definitely feel that way. I definitely feel the tide is starting to change here in American culture for the Ryder Cup. You're playing on the biggest stage in the most prestigious tournament for the most prestigious cup that we play for. It's something extremely special, and it's the coolest experience I've ever had on a golf course, and it's not even close.
But nobody can tell you really what it's going to be like, can they?
Man, they really can't. When I felt like I was really part of the Ryder Cup and was involved in something that was very special was when I walked on stage during the opening ceremony.
Yeah.
When I walked on that stage and I looked at how many people were there, the presentation of the whole thing, how prestigious it was, that's when I was like, wow, this is cool. Like, this is really, really cool.
You and Brooks are the first match out in the tournament. Are there 7,500 people around that first tee?
Yeah.
What was that atmosphere like, teeing the ball up?
To walk from the practice tee to the tee was the longest walk of my life, but probably the coolest walk of my life up to this point.
The American duo teed off against 2018's FedEx Cup champion, Justin Rose, and the Spanish Ryder Cup rookie, John Rahm. Missed putts got them behind early, but Tony's eagle at six squared the match. Then Justin Rose chipped in for birdie at 12, putting the Europeans up by two. Just when all could have been lost, Tony delivered the momentum-turning shot of the match.
I told Brooks coming off 15, I said, we're going to have to birdie probably two of the last three holes if we're going to pull this off. And then there we are on 16. I hit this tee shot into the wind, about 150 yards, hit an 8-iron, and it rose on me just slightly. I remember being so excited. You know, I did the fist pump and all that, And I was excited because I knew a two on that hole was probably going to win the hole. I think that was a huge part of turning that match around. You know, we scored the match up there, and then we won 18 to win one up.
Well, you win on Sunday playing against Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah.
You had another guy who's had a fantastic year.
Yeah.
That had to be pretty satisfying.
I played beautiful golf. It was the best golf I played all year, and I needed to. Tommy's an incredible player, incredible talent. And I have so much respect for him and his game, what he's been able to accomplish. So it was pretty cool to play him and beat him.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor. Faherty is brought to you by Farmers Insurance. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right then, now back to the show.
Tony, this is the segment of the show we call Rapid Fire, and if you don't know what it is, you're probably an insurgent. Okay, somebody start a clock. Somebody. How fast can you list off all of your siblings' names?
Kinga, Pudgy, Tony, Gipper, Narnar, David, KV, Keisha, Kalita.
Well done. If golfers had walkout songs, what would yours be?
Probably the Eagles. I love the Eagles. Something, yes.
Anything by the Eagles?
The Eagles, yeah.
What's your favorite golf course?
Jordan River Par 3.
No, I said a golf course.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All-time favorite movie?
The Gladiator.
The first movie you saw with Elena?
My Best Friend's Wedding.
At a wedding, are you more likely to break out in the fire dance or the chicken dance?
I'd have to say the fire dance just because I've done that more.
Right.
Yeah.
Favorite meal of the day?
Every meal. I just love eating.
Pani popo or fa a papa?
Ooh, pani popo, sure. Yeah.
Okay, I have no idea what either of those are. Ninjas or pirates?
Ninjas.
Favorite non-golf sport to play?
Basketball.
If you need someone to bail you out of jail, who do you call?
Ooh, hopefully my wife.
Who's most likely to call you to ask you to bail them out?
Oh, my brother Gipper, sure. Yeah.
Thank you. And as always, you win nothing and you'll like it. You had offers from various colleges, a lot of good colleges, but you decided that, no, you wanted to turn pro at 17 years old. Why was that?
I had a unique opportunity to play in this deal called Ultimate Game in 2007. This is right after I had verbally committed to play at BYU. It was $2 million to the winner, and we had a backer here in Utah that had approached my dad of backing my brother and I. So we decided to do it and play, and pretty much, you know, that's the short version of us being on our way.
How many competitors?
40. Yep, they picked 40.
And were they all kids, or?
No, you had to be professional to win the $2 million, but you couldn't be on the web.com tour or the PGA tour.
So it was like an enormous mini tour event where you put in your own money and played for it?
Yeah, that's right. So that's when we had to make the choice as a family if I was going to turn pro or if I was going to go to college.
Well, you met Lee Trevino during that that challenge as well. Yeah. What part did he play in you turning pro?
I'm standing on the first hole of this Ultimate Game as a 17-year-old and had just turned pro. And I send my first tee shot. First hole's about 420 yards, and I send it on the front of the green.
If I ran the nationwide tour, I would be calling this young man.
On the back of the tee box is Lee Trevino, and he comes over to me, and he's like, that's the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it. He reached out to Callaway, who he was with at the time, and said, hey, I think you guys should sign this kid who had just turned pro. I think he's got some potential. I was on my way with Callaway because of that, and it was all started because of Lee Trevino.
Throughout his life in golf, Tony has had a knack for putting himself in the right place at the right time, including his shot at a big break back in 2009, along with his brother Gipper on the Big Break Disney. How did you come to audition for the Big Break?
I was actually playing a mini tour event in Arizona, and they were doing auditions on the range.
My name is Tony Finau, and I should be chosen to be on the Big Break because I'm the most competitive person in this world and I bring a lot to the table. Pick me.
This was different, you know, with cameras following you around for the first time. How did that feel?
Yeah, it was a lot different. A lot different pressure than I was used to playing with not a lot of people watching, not a lot of cameras. And then all of a sudden you're playing in front of a lot of cameras and shots that really count. I was like, man, you're pretty good at this game. You know, I was able to hit some great shots under some immense pressure and play with a bunch of older guys.
I'm 19 years old, so I'm really young, but I feel like with the way I'm playing and the way I feel, I belong to be out there right now on the PGA Tour. The dream for Gipper and I is to be paired in the final group in the Masters, you know, in the US Open, in a lot of PGA Tour events, you know, and really expect that from ourselves.
And, you know, I end up being one of the finalists and playing, so it gave me the confidence to know that I can play in front of cameras.
Yeah.
But it taught me that I feel like I could play at a high level.
There were some pretty unusual challenges, too, you know, playing a flop shot over Cinderella's castle. And,
yeah, exactly.
You hit shots from home plate.
To say that I was able to punch a golf shot through a window, you know, from 30 feet, or, you know, to hit a flop shot in front of Cinderella's castle, at Disney World, you know, to hit home runs where the Atlanta Braves practice, you know, their spring training is, it's really, really cool.
Your big break turned into kind of a bad break. There was a cart path involved, wasn't there?
Yeah, hole number 17 at the Magnolia course there. I have a two-shot lead with two holes to go, and I send this perfect drive there, and the next thing you know, I hear a bunch of, you know, from a few people up there and some of the guys that are watching, and, you know, lo and behold, I walk up there and they're like, your ball hit the cart path and went in the water.
Gotta be kidding me.
You know, it was pretty hot. It was a tough time, tough pill to swallow at the time.
Yeah.
Because I knew I had the tournament in my grasp.
Today, Tony's career is on a major rise. He finished tied 10th at the Masters despite a tweaked ankle, and his performance at the 2018 US Open kept the momentum rolling.
Tony 66 in round three featured six birdies and put him in the hunt for a U.S. Open championship.
One of the craziest Saturdays I've ever experienced, probably the craziest. I shoot four under, and I started the day, whatever it was, 11 or 12 shots back, and next thing I know, I'm in the final group on Sunday.
Yeah.
Tony teed off on Sunday in a four-way tie for the lead. Despite his five birdies being countered by five bogeys and a double, Tony managed a career-best fifth place in a major. While perhaps disappointing, it didn't suck.
It was really cool to be in that type of atmosphere and trying to win my first major in the final group is what you dream of.
Then at the Open Championship at Carnoustie,
yeah,
you throw in another top 10. What did you think of Lynx golf?
Everything that's different about Lynx golf compared to traditional golf that I'm used to playing here in the States, I love.
Yeah.
You know, being able to choose a different club off the tee, you have a lot of options. Trying to avoid bunkers, trying to dictate how far the ball's going to roll out, how far it's not going to roll out.
Because it's target running golf, shot, isn't it?
But it really is.
The target is way short of the green.
Yeah.
And it's moving.
Yeah, it seems like it. But playing Carnoustie as the British Open this year, it was Carnasty, but it's really cool to be a part of that Open.
You should see that place when it plays long.
Yeah. I can imagine.
It is. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Then at the final major of the year, you get kind of a Ryder Cup audition.
You
and Xander play with Jim Furyk.
Yeah. It seemed that way. It seemed like, you know, we were paired with him and he was getting to see our games up close for the first time. I didn't have my best stuff coming out on Thursday. If I remember right, I probably had the worst round of my year that Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, and I was a little disappointed in myself because I felt like I just put too much pressure on myself to perform. Friday, I told myself, you're going to just enjoy this. You know, you have an opportunity to play well in front of not only the captain, but, you know, you're at the final major of the year. And try and get yourself back in this golf tournament. Let's make the cut, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, yeah. Friday was a beauty.
It was.
Yeah, the front nine, you make seven birdies, a bogey, and a double.
Yeah, exactly. A triple.
Oh, a triple?
Seven birdies, a bogey, and a triple.
Triple, you're allergic to par at this stage?
Yeah, 100%. I finished with 10 birdies on the round and, you know, tied Gary Player for the most birdies in a PGA Championship, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, and you played pretty well in front of Jim Furyk. Did that mean a lot?
I think it proved to him that I'm willing to play and not give up. You know, 10 birdies is pretty impressive, I feel like, in 18 holes.
Yeah, especially when you throw a triple in. That'll, yeah. Forgetting the majors for just a moment, what's your favorite tournament to play in?
My favorite tournament throughout the PGA Tour season is the Memorial Tournament. Everything about that tournament is special, and I think Jack made it that way.
Yeah.
He knows what it's like to be a player, and so just the way he does it is right.
It is special, yeah.
If you know me and if you hang around me enough, you'll know I love to eat.
Yeah, I spotted that.
And that probably comes from my Polynesian side.
Yeah.
We love to eat. But they have, I think the best food we have on tour.
Oh, yeah.
In the locker room.
And the milkshakes.
And then the milkshakes to top it off, as you know, are incredible.
Your first win in Puerto Rico, what are the moments that stand out for you?
Playing with Ian Poulter, and we were going head-to-head in the final round. And I made a putt on my 10th hole that final round that put me up three shots over him. That was a changing point for me, playing well to, you have an opportunity to win a golf tournament. Let's close it out. It was a huge putt for me at the time, and you know, I went on to win the golf tournament.
Now, when Phil hits somebody in the crowd, he usually goes over and signs a glove.
Yeah.
If you bean somebody, what's your plan of attack?
At Colonial one year, I remember hitting a shot on the 11th hole and nailing a girl right on the top of her head.
Ooh.
That was tough for me to finish that round.
Oh, it's awful.
Without thinking about, I hope I didn't kill a human being or do something crazy to her. Just hopefully she's going to be okay. So that's all I could think about the rest of that round. And I was inspired to just do something special for her, just to check, first of all, check on her, make sure she's okay. And then, I got some flowers and some chocolate for her. I was honestly trying to make sure she was okay and just know that, look, I'm sorry for what I did. You know, we probably couldn't have avoided this situation, but I am sorry for what happened.
What sort of a bounce did you get?
It kicked back towards the fairway.
Oh, excellent.
And forward, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was faced just at the right degrees to where it bounced right off, right into the fairway.
Something positive.
Yeah.
Before getting to the big show, Tony launched his professional career at 17 on the mini tours, where he put up his own money and played to get it back.
What was the best year you had financially on the mini tours?
2011.
Yeah.
On the mini tours, I must have won 15 times. I made six figures on the golf course, which is really good.
Pretty amazing for
mini tours. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
How many times did you go to Q school?
Seven times. Yeah.
It was like a hobby?
Pretty much, yeah. It started to seem that way. I finally got through on my seventh try. Those 6 years prior were tough because I had never even got through second stage. And it'd be all, come January, you start it all over again, mini tours, and keep pressing your way to try and get your game prepared and ready for qualifying school.
Did it ever cross your mind that, I'm not going to make this?
I always felt confident that I could make it to the PGA Tour. And, I think that attitude helped me. I had an attitude of perseverance to just know I was learning something each year. There was something to be learned. And just keep your head down and keep doing what you're doing.
Is it true that sometimes when you were low on money, you and the Gipper would go down to Vegas and look at money games?
Yeah, we would. Right when we turned pro, we were looking for some cash. And
that's straight out of the Lee Trevino book.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly. The saying definitely is true when Lee Trevino says, real pressure is when you're playing for money that you don't have.
You
got $5 in your pocket and you're playing for 100 bucks.
Yeah.
So, and that's how my brother and I were. We would go to these skins game, with 20 and 30 bucks, barely enough gas money to even get back home if we wanted to. And, we're playing for hundreds of dollars. That was a way for us, I feel like, to simulate pressure, golf, and under immense pressure, because that's what separates the best players in the world from, I think, just from the good ones, is performing under immense pressure.
Is there a particular shot you remember from those money games that stands out?
I made a hole-in-one in a skins game when my brother and I were down hundreds of dollars that we didn't have. We were down about six skins. We get to this hole 14 at this Dragon Ridge golf course, which is in Vegas. And again, I must have been down $600 or $700 at this point, and we had a bunch of skins carried over. So we're looking at about $1,100 of skins carried over into this hole. And I hit this beautiful forearm from 225 yards and canned it. I end up winning. You triple the skins if you make a hole in one. You double the skins if you make an eagle.
Right.
So I tripled, the money that I had just won on that specific hole on the skins throughout the day. So that was one of the most memorable shots I've ever hit in a skins game, because what was on the line. If I don't make that.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. What were you going to do? Vegas is not the sort of place where you want to owe people money.
Yeah, exactly. I would say my prayer in the morning and hopefully it worked out.
No, back in those early days, you didn't even look like a golfer, right? You would show up dressed in all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I still don't think I look like a golfer unless I have a golf club in my hand. I never dressed like a golfer. When I'm off the golf course and as a kid, it didn't appeal to me to dress like I played golf. So I would wear shorts, T-shirt, crew socks. That's how I would practice. That's how I would play.
Right.
So going to these money games, I would show up that way. And I guess it was just kind of the hustler in me that would go in that type of appearance. So it definitely worked. People are willing to bet whatever if they think they have you. And I learned that fast playing in these money games, and as people started to see that I could play, then the hustler has to go away in your games. You got to really show up.
Right.
But, for those first few times, nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew that I could play. And especially didn't know that someone dressed like that is any good at golf. So I would hustle my way into those matches and win some money.
When you do finally make it out onto the PGA Tour, what were the adjustments that you had to make?
I had to adjust to playing alongside Phil, Tiger, Rory. That was used to watching them on TV.
Yeah.
And I had to change my mindset fast from getting there to, no, you're here, now you got to beat them.
It kind of got real.
Yeah, exactly. It got real really fast for me.
Yeah.
And I told myself, all right, you can do it. I changed my mindset from, being in awe of these guys and being around them to, you can actually do something pretty special in this game, and I really believe that.
In November of 2011, you went through an incredible range of emotions. You lost your mom, and then you became a father.
Yeah.
Just a couple of days later.
One day later.
Yeah. That must have been an extraordinary time in your life.
My life changed forever on both those days. I lost not only my mom, who was every sense of the word, incredible woman, and just an absolute beauty. She really was. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I became a dad the very next day. So the emotions is hard to explain. You know, the life and death. And,
yes.
You know, going through that and experiencing that, it's something in my life that has helped me understand, like, the most important things, mm-hmm. you know, the way I look at my life. And, you know, I love playing golf for a living, and I love doing this. I love doing what I do. I love competing. But I always have to remind myself, you know, this is not life or death. You know, I lost someone extremely close to me, one of my best friends, arguably my best friend at the time, just before I met my wife.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, my mom was an incredible person. To lose someone that close to you, and the way it in a tragic car accident, I didn't have any time to plan for something like that.
Did she get to see you on the PGA Tour?
She didn't, no.
No.
Yeah, she never got to see me on the PGA Tour, and she was there every step of the way, you know, just driving me to the golf tournaments. For her not to see me physically excel on the PGA Tour is something that I think about a lot,
yeah.
And not having her there. But again, I know that at the end of the day, this game has so much to offer, but, you know, it's not life or death.
Yeah. But you did develop an ulcer.
I did.
You know, from the stress.
I did.
I didn't know. How bad did that get?
Yeah, I got bad. I didn't know how to deal with it. I ended up just getting this perforated ulcer. It was a bleeding ulcer in your mm-hmm. stomach just from that stress, just everything that was going on in my life. And I think going through that, you know, three-month span where I couldn't play golf,
yeah.
I literally had to think about how to sit up again using those muscles and all those type of things. So I learned a lot just in that short time. And I was able to regroup on not only my golf career, and I know that's what my mom would have wanted because she supported me for so long and supported me so much. But also, you know, my marriage, what did I want to do with having kids? Was I ready to be a husband and a father? So I went through a lot throughout that span, but my eyes were open throughout that experience.
Why do you wear green on Sundays?
Yeah, I wear green to honor my mom.
Yeah. You
know, her favorite color was green.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something that I do. Every Sunday you'll see me, it's either a green shirt or green pants. And that's just to honor my mom. And, you know, another way I honor her, I started a foundation that if you look at my logo, it has a TF in it, and you can see the TF pretty clearly.
Yes.
But at the bottom, there's a V at the bottom. And that's, you know, my mom's name was Vina. And I did that to honor her as well, because I feel like, you know, I wouldn't be the person I am today and the man I am today without her influence. So, I make sure that I honor her in ways that I can, and those are just a couple ways that I do that.
How many kids do you and Elena have now? They were running around last night, but I kind of lost track of them.
Yeah, we have four.
Yeah?
Yeah. Drace is 7, Nini is 6, Tony Jr. is 3, and Sage is 2.
TJ is quite the character.
He is, yeah. He's very different than the other three.
Yeah, he is. Tony
Jr.
That.
Yeah, Tony Jr. is nuts, but it's great having kids.
Is it difficult to balance your home life and your life on the golf course?
Yeah, no question. It's difficult to balance that. You have to do your best to try and balance your golf life, professional life, with your family life. You know, one of the greatest things for me when having a family is having kids that have no expectations of you playing, no worries about how you play, where you play, or whatever the case. You know, the greatest joy I have is seeing my kids for the first time after a long break. And just the sheer joy that they have of seeing me, you know,
yeah.
is pretty special for me.
If you could take a mulligan for anything in your life, what would it be?
I don't know. I don't know if I would take any mulligans.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but I think from mistakes and from your weaknesses you can be strengthened, and I definitely have been. And a lot of the choices that I've made haven't all been wise, but I've learned from them. And I don't know if I'd be the person I am today. Whether people think that's a great person or not, I feel like I've been through a lot and I've learned a lot. And I don't know if there's a mulligan that I would take in my life.
Well, I'm not sure it was a wise choice doing this show, but thank you for doing it.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks.
It's been a long time
great
coming.
Great to be with you. Yeah,
thanks.
Great
and congratulations on everything.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
I'll be honest. I think Tony's twisting, turning journey to the top is a hit. Tony's story isn't just good for the game, it's good for everybody. And that's even better for the game. I may be a cynic, but I know goodness when I see it. And Tony Finau is one of the best things ever to happen to the obsession for putting little white balls in little round holes. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks for joining me, Fegherty fans. That's our show for tonight. You can catch me on Facebook, Instagram, and FegherTwit. You can also find more Fegherty podcasts presented by Farmers Insurance on Fegherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Fegherty and subscribe. If you love the show, why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating.